I really loved my time at Fox 8. I learned a lot, but it just got to a point that I felt like it wasn't, I wanted to do something new, and I did something new. And I enjoy what I do, even though it was a rocky start. I did not make enough money to cover my bills. Going through that process, I started teaching, and I found that that is actually something I love as well. So now I'm doing literally the best of both worlds. I've always wanted to do music, journalism, and I always saw myself in the end game doing teaching. But now I'm doing all three. So I'm doing freelance journalism, I'm singing with the Brassaholics, and I'm doing my own gigs. And also, I am teaching at Booker T. Washington as a vocal music instructor. So I'm living my dream.
Crazy, that baby crazy, eyes of bliss.
What was the hardest thing for you after leaving Fox 8? Well, obviously the money thing, but like what was the most difficult? Was it more difficult to break into music?
Actually, my music experience was actually rather, I don't want to say easy, but compared to like other singers, I did really well. Like after my first year, even though the first couple of months, even the first year was really hard. I mean, after my first year and a half, I already was doing like jazz fests and major festivals in the city. So usually it takes, you know, singers in the city a while to get to that time. But for me, I was, I want to say less, I'll say a year and a half. And within a year and a half, I was already doing festivals.
So you're from here and you already had the connections, basically? Is that part of it? And I know you had already been singing even while you're
I actually, in that case, I actually did not use any connections to get there. What I started doing in that 2016 years, I dedicated every month, every week, I dedicated to doing an open mic. So that's how I kind of got my name out there in the music arena. And I got picked up by this reggae band, Higher Heights, and their lead singer was going on maternity leave. Well, she went on maternity leave and never came back. So I took all of the gigs that they did. So they did Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, and they performed on Frenchman Street every weekend. So that's kind of like was my start.
What's your preferred style and what kind of styles are you actually working? What are your working styles as opposed to what you really love to sing?
So this is like I feel like I'm going through an experimental phase. So I've started off singing church music and gospel, but also, you know, like the rarity of New Orleans, there are a lot of Black Catholics. So I grew up Catholic and in a African-American kind of like environment, so I was versed with the classical music. So a lot of stuff that we do, recitatives and responsorial psalms, you kind of have to be versed in that as well. So I've kind of got a best of both worlds in that aspect. Minor for a little while, and I studied classical voice, and then I got into, let's see, it was the R&B, and then it was reggae. And when I got the Higher Heights gig, I had never sung reggae in my life. I mean, I knew a couple of Bob Marley tunes, but that was it. It was like, not, I was not a hardcore roots rock reggae guy. And now I'm really diving into jazz. So I'm really, it's actually something I'm passionate about because we live in New Orleans, we live in the birthplace of jazz, but as a music teacher, it's something that we don't teach. Like, I was looking up, you know, who was it? It was like James Booker or Buddy Bolden. And these are names who are, you know, jazz legends. And if you go to places like Chicago, you know, people know these people. But as a lifelong resident of New Orleans or the New Orleans area, I've never studied those people until now. So I'm really trying to kind of get into more knowledge of the jazz and the history of New Orleans as an educator and also as a vocalist. But now I am all over the place. I am doing reggae a little bit. Well, I'm not doing reggae as much as I used to do, but my main thing right now is gospel, of course, in church, R&B, jazz with the Brazzaholics, and now I'm actually looking into Afrobeat. I'm a half Nigerian. My dad was Nigerian. So I'm really looking into Afrobeat and African music.
In terms of New Orleans culture, it's surprising, and it may well be surprising to others, but it's surprising to me that we don't have a greater emphasis on musical education in a city like New Orleans, which, of course, you're helping to take care of, I know, in your role as teacher.
Yeah. It's interesting, and you have programs that started, implementing that because I guess after Hurricane Katrina, well, obviously after Hurricane Katrina, most of the arts programs were cut because, you know, you need to focus on education after the storm and recovery school district or whatever. But there are programs like Roots of Music who are formed with, you know, the Rebirth Brass Band members to help kind of like move the culture forward. But these are only a few tools that our students and our kids have access to. So I would be, I don't know, I would like to see the Orleans Parish School Board or New Orleans community in general just take hold to more of the arts. My music teacher, I've been playing piano since I was 5, and she's been at McDonald 35 as a vocal music teacher there as well for 39 years. She makes 40 years next year. And she says, you know, it's sad right now. Like, it's like we almost don't value the jewel that New Orleans is with our music and our art.
Talk about live performance. I mean, it's great to be in New Orleans where you can book multiple performances at multiple venues. Mm-hmm. Every week in the best of times. We're not in the best of times, obviously.
Correct.
So talk to us about what sort of impact the bar and club closures have had on, you know, that part of your work and your life.
So now, you know, gigs on the weekend are basically non-existent, but I personally have been requested to sing at different virtual events. So the Brassaholics actually did a show at the House of Blues 2 weeks ago, a virtual show at the House of Blues. So it was good. It was a good production, but we didn't make that much money. So it's just dealing with that, the new environment of trying to navigate putting out art, putting out your art firm, but also it being profitable. I also, not too long ago, did like a virtual party for one of my friends. And so the new thing is now I have to invest in equipment. I have to get mics and I live stream. And I thank God for my background in, you know, news, because I kind of have a grasp on what to get or even how to, you know, write and phrase what I want to write to submit to people. So it can possibly get picked up. But yeah, it's just an interesting new world. But I will say, before Corona, musicians were complaining about how, you know, revenue or tips had significantly decreased from the French Quarter to Frenchman Street. And I think part of it was musicians not getting to the times, not adapting to the times, because now I don't carry cash. So how am I going to pass around a tip jar and I don't even have cash? So some bands were innovative and started, you know, giving out their cash apps and selling merchandise. But I think that would forward that effort even more. But I will say, I do predict, like, moving forward, that music, live music in New Orleans is not going to be cheap. Not at all. I can see, especially with the new mandates and you have to be 6 feet apart, I wouldn't be surprised if you go to a club and they're trying to charge like $50 a head, because it, we, like one of my friends said the other day, we've become almost like one of the non-essential jobs to being technically essential, because people are yearning for connection in our music right now. So I see when those clubs and venues open a tax on them, and it might not be available to those who don't have the means.
You want to talk about NPR and the video report that they put together with about you and the Brassaholics and what that?
Yeah, so actually we went viral twice with that. So first, Sam Winstrom of WWL did a web story on I'll Fly Away, and I believe it took legs from there. After that, we had about 50,000 views, and then we got the NPR thing. So it was kind of like a double whammy. It happened because one of the band members, actually the band leader, Winston Turner, he received news that one of his friends lost his mom. And the friend was explaining how, you know, the our world is different, and you can't have funerals and you can't have people there, and it's so much going on, and he just felt so bad. And then after he got that news, he found out that a popular DJ Black and Mild died in New Orleans. So he was like, we have to do something. So he called me up, because at the time, I mean, I just started with the Brassaholics, like, I'm less than 6 months. So he called me up and he said, we got to do something we can do, you know, I'll Fly Away. And I said, okay, that's cool. So he was like, we want to do it as if we were going to be at a funeral honoring somebody's life. So we want to dress up. So everybody wore suits, and we did the song, and it was meant to send to that, I believe, that one person, but you know, we put it on YouTube and it blew up. You know, the greater, I guess, benefit of that is people, it formed a sense of, I guess, comfort to people who are suffering right now. And I always use this line, I said, music is therapy. So we're going through so much right now with the coronavirus and just life in general, and trying to wrap our heads around what next steps to take. And it's comforting to know that you can listen to a song or play some music, or, you know, just release for a moment with this song, and especially those who are hurting from people who have died during the coronavirus and all that we're dealing with COVID-19.